Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning, New Orleans. Beautiful morning. Our fellow neighbors out on the east still struggle. Water still rising. The president is visiting North Carolina as we speak and talking to some of the officials there. And we continue to wish them the best. And they are in our thoughts and prayers. I have family out that way and have been checking in intermittently with them in order to see how it's going. And obviously they're free and clear where they are, but their neighbors just immediately to the east of them are suffering big time, and how well we know that feeling. Big weekend this weekend. The Saints take on the Dirty Birds. That's a big rivalry. Looking forward to that. LSU's playing La Tech. I believe Tulane's playing as well this weekend. So we got another big weekend and the Fried Chicken Festival. I don't know about you, but there's nothing better than a plate full of fried chicken and all kinds of different sides. They have about six or seven different states that will be represented there. It is free. It's out at Wallenberg Park on Saturday and Sunday. I think I'm going to be a judge. So I'm trying to fast this week so that I can eat as much chicken as my body will let me devour at that point in time, and we'll see where that leads us. It's going to be ugly. In the second hour, we're going to be talking about – I'm sorry, in the third hour, we'll talk about Judge Brett Kavanaugh's hearing, whether or not it should be postponed. We'll talk to the New Orleans Crime Coalition. They've issued their report. And in the studio now is Rafael Goyeneche, the head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. They have just released their study on the docket of the New Orleans Criminal Court, the backlog, and all of the issues that go along with efficiency of that court. And in studio with me is Rafi Goyeneche. Thanks so much for joining us, Raf.
My pleasure to be with you this morning, Neil.
So tell us, you know, from the 100,000-foot level, what the report reveals, positive, negative, and how that shakes out.
So first of all, we've been doing this for about 25 years. And the premise for this is that judges, just like other officials, are elected, but they're probably the least scrutinized component of the criminal justice system. People generally only hear about judges when they're running for re-election. So we decided to take a look at some metrics that would measure judicial efficiency and performance. And we discovered that the National Center for State Courts had those metrics, and they often get commissioned by courts to come in and do an analysis of the court's efficiencies. And they issue those reports to the court, but they never see the light of day. So what we elected to do is to copy their methodology in the performance metrics that they have identified, and we'll issue the report publicly. So this report sort of becomes a way of conveying to the public and to the judges. It's actually used as a management tool now by many of the judges to measure how effectively and efficiently they're managing their dockets. So before we started doing this, many of the judges over there had no idea how big their inventory was. So if you're operating a business, you need to know what your inventory is, and judges need to know their inventory of cases. So the metrics that we look at is the size of dockets. So under the rules of court, the court has devised an allotment process that they approve of as a fair and equal distribution of cases. So the docket sizes should be relatively the same because the workload is evenly distributed to the court. So we look at docket size. We look at the age of cases. The American Bar Association recommends that no cases be over a year old, which is unrealistic when you're looking at some of the homicide cases, and there's a lot of homicide cases in New Orleans. And we also take a look at the amount of time it takes to conclude a case from its inception. So those are the three metrics that we apply. And we rate the judges not with another court in another state or within Louisiana. We rate the judges with respect to their peers. So we're not comparing them to anything other than their peers. And because of the allotment process, there shouldn't be great disparity. But what we found is there is great disparity in the docket compositions and management of certain judges. So this is, I think, an important tool to inform policymakers, the judges, and the public about the performance of their elected judges.
It would seem to me that judges want to be and want to have an evaluation of their efficiency and how they manage their docket in order to try and improve. At least the forward-leaning judges, those that have confidence in their ability and understanding what their role is. Because a successful arrest is only as good as a successful prosecution. The longer these cases linger, the less likely they are to be successfully prosecuted, right?
Well, there's also other implications. So the longer these cases go on, the more costs are associated with keeping somebody in custody.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because is there not a difference in custody cases as opposed to out on bond cases, that it would seem to me that there would be more of a reason to expedite the in custody cases? We talk about, and we've heard groups talking about, that we're jailing people and the only reason they're in jail is because they're poor. I don't necessarily buy into all of that, but I understand what they're talking about, that there should be a heightened approach and more efficient approach at dealing with in custody cases.
Well, absolutely. So the judges that are the most efficient are prioritizing their jail cases and their older cases. So they recognize that those older cases need to be presided over, and justice needs to be administered. And the longer a case goes on, the greater the costs and the more problems that it causes, not just for the prosecution, but for the defense, the victims and witnesses, and all the players in the criminal justice system. So this is, there not only is justice being delayed in certain instances, the cost to the taxpayers is being increased, and the hammer is and the wounds either of victims or unjustly charged offenders are being adversely affected by the luck of the allotment. If you go to a judge that has an enormous backlog of cases, it may take you four times as long for your case to be resolved than if you are lucky enough to be allotted to one of the more efficient judges.
You use the word great differences between the bottom and the top. I say it's huge, because in 2017, 47% of Judge Durbingy's cases were greater than a year.
Yep.
Whereas Judge Ziblich, who was the highest performing judge on the court, 13%.
Right. And he only had 92 cases.
Well,
47%.
He only had 92 open cases, right. And that was the next point I was going to make. And Judge Durbingy has 542 cases.
So just the cases in Judge Durbingy.
This is purely to me, having worked in that court when I started my career, and there's not a whole lot that has changed, quite frankly. Same number of judges, same magistrate court system.
Actually, there's two more judges than when you were there.
Oh, that's right. You're right. You're right.
There's 12 opposed to 10 back in the day.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You may be right. Yeah. So there's now 12, there's more judges, but you have a differential of 92 open cases versus 542 open cases.
Exactly.
I mean, that is, 542 is the byproduct of not working, of the court not being in session, working these cases, moving it through 8 hours a day, every day, grinding it out. Right. Plain and simple. I mean, we just talked offline before we came on the air, and I mentioned two of the judges that would move a docket faster than anybody that I'd ever seen. And you laughed because you work there, and you said, absolutely, those two judges, They'd grind it out.
Yep. Yeah. They established a culture. And the successful judges, human nature is to avoid the difficult things. So the successful judge that is efficiently managing their docket is establishing a culture and an expectation, not just on prosecutors, but on the defense as well, all the parties involved. It's the interest of justice for it to be administered in an expeditious manner while guaranteeing everybody's rights. So when I was a young ADA and I first appeared in Section J before Judge Ozer, he recognized me as someone he had never seen before, and he called me up and said, you're new to the DA's office. And I said, yes, Your Honor. And he said, I'd like to tell you the way that I operate my court. Each side gets two continuances, no questions asked. If there's a third continuance, you better be in the hospital. Otherwise, that deputy over there is going to come looking for you and bring you here to answer. Well, I got the message.
Absolutely.
And that's the message that the successful judges, maybe they use different language, but they have established control of their courts and what the expectations are. Law says that the DA sets the docket, but the judge can determine what is a fair way to set the docket.
Well, just to highlight my point, the least efficient judge, Judge Durbigny, has 203 more open cases than the second least efficient judge. And that judge has only a differential of 45 cases from the third least. So there's one significant outlier here that obviously doesn't have skills as it relates to managing a docket. I mean, the empirical data doesn't care about emotion, doesn't care about their feelings, doesn't care about any of that. I mean, it's just so far an outlier, it's ridiculous.
Right. Judge Durbigny, just his cases that are open greater than 1 year, he has 256 cases that are over a year old. That is greater than the average case load for 7 of the 12 judges. So that, I think, puts in perspective that he has a lot of catching up to do. And I think he needs to be, the public needs to realize what's happening in his section of court.
We're going to take a break. We have Rafi Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We're talking about the criminal court backlog, their ability to manage their docket, and what that means to you as it relates to your safety on the street. And we'll talk more about that when we return. We want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. This is Newell on WWL. We're back, and we're talking to Rafael Goyeneche of the Metropolitan Crime Commission and a report that they issue annually, actually, looking at the criminal district court and their efficiencies. One of the things that often goes unsaid is that this is not just about the safety and security of the public at large as it relates to the efficiency of this court system. In many respects, this is all about the defendant and that defendant's right to a speedy trial.
Absolutely.
And when we look at the administration of justice and we see the wide disparity here as it relates to how these cases are ultimately resolved and go unresolved, that is something that I've often wondered why the Louisiana Supreme Court doesn't compel these courts that collect monies to fund their criminal court operating fund to pay all kinds of different expenses, that they don't mandate that there's somebody do these studies so they can know and have a better understanding of where they are as it relates to their peers across the country.
I agree. But if we're going to wait for the Supreme Court to fund that and make that happen, I think we're going to be waiting a long time.
But
we've been doing this for 25 years, and they've never stepped up.
They have supervisory jurisdiction over this issue.
Right, right.
And why they fail to exercise that jurisdiction is beyond me. It would seem to me that if they are concerned about the fair administration of justice, that this would be a shock to conscience moment for them when they see the disparity that's presented here.
I agree.
Albeit the overall report is a good report for the court as a whole, but the problem is it's on the back of about 5 or 6 judges.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that are zinging it, you know, and some in the bottom tier that have improved and continue to improve, others that have reached kind of a threshold and a plateau that there probably is not a lot of improvement that can occur in those high-performing courts. But the other one-third of those courts that are kind of dragging behind, something needs to be done. Why? They should all be at the median.
Well, obviously, you know, not everyone is going to have the same number. There's going to be some person that'll be in first place and someone in last.
But the differentials wouldn't be this great.
Right, I agree. And that's the meat of this coconut. So this isn't about who's number one and number two. It's what the median or average is and the separation between the bottom of the court and the average. That's what this is really about. And as you point out, and the point that's made in this report is there shouldn't be the great disparity between the dockets of these judges, because the system that they implemented for their court is supposed to evenly distribute the workload. So these metrics basically identify the judges that are managing their dockets appropriately and the ones that are not managing their dockets appropriately.
In the end, this is all about productivity.
Yes.
Plain and simple. We'll continue this conversation when we return. Give us a call, 260-1870, or text us at 870-870. We're talking about criminal court when we return. I would love to hear from you guys, 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. What do you think? Do you think, you know, that there should be somebody looking at this? And on the Blue Runner opinion poll, should judges' case management be reviewed annually by the Louisiana Supreme Court? 76% of the respondents say yes. So, Rafi, you know, not unlike every other report that's issued, there's always some detractors to that report. So tell us about what some of the detractors say.
Well, some of the detractors or criticisms say that the judges at the bottom are doing a good job, and you can't just measure the judges by how efficiently they're moving their dockets, implying that some of the judges that are moving their dockets efficiently may be violating the rights of the people appearing before them. So I've heard those arguments for 25 years because we've been doing this for 25 years. And those arguments don't hold water. I said, you know, show me where a defense attorney has filed a motion and taken a writ on a judge at the top of our report that is accused of violating their client's rights by moving a case expeditiously.
And that it's systematic, that year over year over year, you're getting these appeals or writs taken to the court saying that they're not impartial, they're not fair, and that the process of the court is
generally the judges at the top are going to have the least numbers of writs filed against them, you know, because they're on top of the law. The same dedication that you see in docket management permeates every part of what they do. You don't get the numbers that some of these judges have achieved by getting to work late and leaving early.
And the same can be said for the ones at the bottom of the report. This is not an attack on their judicial intellect.
No.
It may just be that they're not good managers and or stewards of the docket, which is an entirely different mindset than understanding the law and things of that nature. Is more scheduling, utilizing your support staff more appropriately, more efficiently in order to move the cases through the system.
Exactly, exactly. The other criticism that we get from time to time is that some people say, well, some of the judges at the bottom of our ranking operate specialty courts, mm-hmm. and I concede that. But several of the judges at the top of our rankings also operate specialty courts, and it doesn't exclude or influence their ability to manage their dockets in an effective and an efficient manner.
Well,
so that's
once again,
an excuse.
Once again, an opportunity for the criminal court operating fund. If you need to get an appointment from the Supreme Court to handle the specialty court, and if this is the byproduct of handling specialty court, those at the bottom, then maybe you need to reevaluate how that is functioning and how it operates.
Specialty courts are optional for judges. It's voluntary for them to do that.
And
but what they're elected to do is to adjudicate cases and manage their dockets. So if the specialty courts are becoming too demanding for some of the judges to handle, their responsibility is to their dockets. So maybe, as you point out, they should resign from their specialty court assignments.
One of the other things, and I want you to talk about case mix and then lead into this, and we got to get to a break, but I want to just set it up. Where the public really needs to be concerned are the in-custody cases, because they've already said, and there's been any number of studies that say that there's not really a strong appetite for increasing jail beds, the number of jail beds. So you have to effectively manage that very carefully. You got to make sure that you're putting the impact criminal in there as much as possible, and that begs of a very efficient judicial system, because you will turn that jail population over 7, 8, 9 times a year. And the more that you can turn it over by processing those jail cases, the more that you can selectively incapacitate the impact criminal and drive crime down. So you don't work in a vacuum. And oftentimes the court, I think, loses sight of that fact, that at their point in time along the timeline, they can very much influence the backlog in the jail.
Absolutely.
And the overcrowding in the jail. And, you know, everybody, all of the silos here have to work in concert with one another in order to have an overall efficient system. Because it's not just worth your while to have one sector of it, right, efficient, and all the others inefficient.
Right, exactly.
Well, we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the case mix that can help drive this, too. When we return, we have Rafael Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, joining us, and we'll grab some calls as well. We'll be right back after the break. This is Newell and Rafi Goyeneche on WWL. On the Blue Runner opinion poll, should judges' case management be reviewed annually by the Louisiana Supreme Court? 83% of the respondents say yes. Let's go to line one, talk to Linda in New Orleans East. What say you, Linda?
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, and you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling concerning the fact that I passed by 2 lane broad concerning my job every day. And I'm so happy that the traffic light has finally been put before I got rear-ended. I've never been rear-ended, but I used to stop for the pedestrians all the time. And the traffic signal is finally there at 2 lane and broad, at Gravy and Broad. Did you see that?
No, I haven't, but I'm glad that they've been able to. You said they remediated it? They fixed it?
Yeah, within 3 weeks, we actually have a traffic light, finally.
Oh, okay, well, great. That's great news. Thanks so much for calling in, Linda. Appreciate it. So, Rafi, when we talk about the case mix, tell us about, you know, the case mix here.
Well, you know, to put the numbers and the metrics in some perspective, you have to look at docket composition. So normally, violent offenses and gun offenses may be 20% of a court's docket. In Orleans Parish, you're looking at 59%. So that makes it even more remarkable for some of the numbers that you're seeing here. Now, this court's a little bit different than, say, Jefferson Parish, because the judges in Jefferson Parish have civil and criminal dockets. This court just has criminal dockets. So civil district court handles the civil cases.
Right.
But still, it has to be the toughest docket composition in the state of Louisiana, which makes the achievements of the court as a whole, I think, even more impressive, because those are the toughest cases. The violence felonies and the weapons felonies are the toughest cases to resolve. They take the longest amount of time just because those cases generally are not resolved early on in the process because of the exposure for jail time involved in that. So those cases can only be resolved if the cases are put into a trial posture, and much of the court is getting those cases into a trial posture expeditiously, which allows them to conclude their cases. The judges that have the large dockets are competing for docket time because they have so many cases, takes them longer to get them into a trial posture, which prevents them from achieving some of the better numbers. So it's really, it boils down to management, but the dockets of these courts are what is remarkable to me. When you see the composition being primarily overwhelmingly violent felonies and weapons.
It's nothing more than a reflection of the challenges of the community at large.
Absolutely. And it shows that police and prosecutors are identifying and targeting the worst of the worst.
The impact criminal.
Yep. Yep. All right.
Let's go to line one. Larry and Abita, what say you, Larry?
Sheriff. I'm retired Leo, and I've observed many, many, many times. I've gone to court and sat there waiting for a case to start that was on the docket, scheduled for a particular time, and 15, 20, 30 minutes after the scheduled start time, here comes the lawyer for the defendant bebopping in and says, Your Honor, I have to have a continuance. I have another court going on. And I think a lot of the times that the lawyers are either, number one, they're not prepared, and that's how they do it, or number two, they're building their schedule up so full they don't have time. So it's not always the judge. The judge will grant the continuance in the respect of due process.
I get what you're saying, but the fact of the matter is that lawyer knew well in advance of that day that he or she had a conflict, and it's incumbent upon them to notify both courts of the conflict and let that be worked out. And it's the proactive judges that set down the law and say, this is what's expected of you, and I'm not willing to accept anything less. Those are the ones that are able to drive through those types of issues.
I've seen examples where either prosecutor or defense counsels are late arriving in court, and the judge will stop the proceedings and say, you know, your subpoena said court starts at 8:30. You weren't here. You've wasted the court's time. You're going to go sit and wait, and the court will decide when I'm going to release you and when your case will be called. But you have disrespected. That's the type of culture that the efficient judges set, and you only have to do that once. And the word of that gets out to all the parties.
You know, one of my favorite judges was Judge Dennis Waldron, and maybe I shouldn't say, but he would take, you know, the subpoena said 8:30. He'd walk into court at 8:30 on the nose. He'd take the bench. And he would say, for the record, he'd say, I want the record to reflect that Judge Waldron has taken the bench at 8:30. I'd like the record to also reflect none of the lawyers that are supposed to be here at this point in time to handle the following cases are present. And he would document, you know, and I think you knew of his work ethic as well.
I mean, he's legendary, you know, and he
In fact,
is,
we got several texts. Bring Judge Waldron back, and you'll knock this docket down in no time at all.
Right, right.
We got to take a break. Give us a call, 260-1870, or text us at 870-870. We're talking with Rafael Goyeneche from the Metropolitan Crime Commission about a recent report dealing with the court backlog. Good news and bad, you know, and some not so good news in the report, but overall positive, and that's a good thing for the court. We'll be right back. On the text line, Judge Waldron actually started court promptly at 8 a.m. every day, not 8:30. I stand corrected. I'm getting old. My memory's not like it used to be. A wonderful man, but not if you were late.
Yep.
Rafi, final thoughts.
Well, I think the court deserves to be commended for managing by and large their responsibilities in a very effective and efficient manner. But I still think that there are a few judges, if 10 of the 12 judges can manage their dockets responsibly and effectively, there's no reason that all 12 can't. So we'll continue to name the judges that aren't doing their job. But the good news to the public is the overwhelming majority of the court is doing an outstanding job.
I think the highlight of this is not necessarily the details of the report itself, is the willingness of a number of judges on that court to look at the report and modify what they've done in order to get to, you know, what's the accepted matrix nationally.
Absolutely. I think there's a pride in doing your job well, and they realize that this indicates that they're doing their jobs well.
Couldn't have said it better myself. We'll be right back. Thank you so much.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.